We begin with our first reading from the Acts of the Apostles. That day, a bitter persecution started against the church in Jerusalem, and everyone except the apostles fled the country districts of Judea and Samaria. There were some devout people, however, who buried Stephen and made great mourning for him. Saul then worked for the total destruction of the church. He went from house to house, arresting both men and women and sending them to prison. Those who had escaped went from place to place, preaching the good news. One of them was Philip, who went to a Samaritan town and proclaimed the Christ to them. The people united in welcoming the message Philip preached, either because they had heard of the miracles he worked, or because they saw them for themselves. There were, for example, unclean spirits that came shrieking out of many who were possessed, and several paralytics and cripples were cured. There was great rejoicing in that town as a result. And now our gospel reading from the Gospel according to John. Jesus said to the Jews, "I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will never hungry. He who believes in me will never thirst. But as I have told you, you can see me and still you do not believe. All that the Father gives me will come to me, and whoever comes to me, I shall not turn him away. Because I have come from heaven, not to do my own will, but to do the will of the one who sent me. Now the will of him who sent me is that I should lose nothing of all that he has given to me, and that I should raise it up on the last day. Yes, it is my Father's will that whoever sees the Son and believes in him shall have eternal life, and that I shall raise him up on the last day." We turn now to our reflection on our readings for this day's liturgy. The strange and even awful thing about we human beings, I think, is that what we are really after can be staring us in the face, and yet we still miss it. Even worse, we may try to do away with the very thing or the very person that we need most. How strange. One can see this in our readings for today's liturgy. For example, in the first reading from Acts, the good news of the resurrection of Jesus and the signs that accompany this in Jerusalem do not lead to a great conversion and gladness, but, as our author Luke describes it, a bitter persecution, which meant that many in the fledgling Christian community had to flee. Strong echoes here of Jesus' own preaching and the persecution that he suffered as well. Prominent among those persecuting the church is a person called Saul, soon to become Paul through his conversion, in which Paul comes to see. The final part of our reading from Acts draws a rather nice contrast. One would expect that the authorities in Jerusalem would be the ones to recognize the presence of God in this new movement and its message of salvation for all, as well as the signs that accompany it. But, as with Jesus' own preaching, they do not. But those whom they would regard as heretics and ignorant, namely the Samaritans, they do recognize the truth of the good news about Jesus, and they believe in the signs that accompany its preaching. And so, in the wisdom of God, those who seem unlikely outsiders are often the first to see the point and become disciples. Much the same message can be seen in the Gospel of John, but here it's in the form of one of Jesus' sermons on the bread of life, rather than in a story, as in the Acts of the Apostles. Jesus proclaims that the one who believes in him will never be hungry or thirsty, will never be abandoned by God, and in the end shall have eternal life. Now surely this is the kind of message that human beings desire to hear, and its truth is, according to John, backed up by the person of Jesus and his actions. But, as Jesus also says to his Jewish audience, you can see me, and still you do not believe. The Gospels, of course, claim that Jesus preached a message that he was prepared to live by, and that he was completely committed to the salvation of humanity, even unto death. The reading from Acts of the Apostles makes a similar claim about the early church. That is, it lived an authentic Christian life and proclaimed the gospel faithfully. Hence, the responsibility for rejection lay with those who rejected Jesus and the early preachers, unless, of course, one could argue they were acting out of sheer ignorance. However, when it comes to us, we need to be cautious about making the same claims about ourselves and about the church of our day. And blaming secular society, for example, or capitalism for the decline of church membership and the bad press that the church has received these days, regrettably too frequently. The rejection of the good news and the decline in membership of the churches may be due to these things, but it may be even more due to our own faults and lack of self-criticism. We can never be sure that we have put our own house in perfect order. How can you measure this and make the claim? Nevertheless, we need to try and do so to the best of our ability before we dare attempt to preach to others and tell them what they need to do. And further, we need to remember that any impact for good that we do have is due more to God's grace working in us than any of our own skills or strategies.